And I'm trucking on, I'm trucking on. Well, I'll move her on down the line. Another time will do me fine. I'm trucking on.
Welcome back, everybody. I just finished up an incredible interview with my very good friend, Brant Landry, and excited to share that with you. Brant and I have, we're the exact same age. I mean, we've really known each other through our entire adult life, kind of being intertwined in the commercial, industrial real estate business. And so we talk about that and all the things that we talk about. And I mean, Brant's going to drop some serious knowledge. He's had such a great career in industrial real estate, all facets, from being a broker to managing teams to starting companies to now starting an investment development company that's done $500 million worth of deals. So we get into everything, and especially all of his insights on personal spiritual growth and development, which are my favorite things to talk about. So hope you enjoy. Here comes Brant Landry. Let's do it. Brant Landry, what's up, dude?
What's up, Ward? How are you?
Great.
Good.
Thanks for joining me today.
Glad to do it, man.
Welcome to Truckin' On.
I love it.
It's my new podcast, as you know.
I feel like a celebrity.
Isn't it fun putting on the Troy Aikman style headsets?
Absolutely.
Do you do that? Have you ever done this before?
This is my first time.
Yeah. Have you ever, this is your first podcast?
First podcast.
Love it. I had George Billingsley do his first podcast.
Love it. I'm following some big names here. Summit Hogue and George Billingsley.
You're a big name. Brant Landry.
I appreciate that.
We met when we were in our 20s. You were at Staubach Company the first time we met.
That's correct.
I remember specifically you started in real estate in like right out of college, right?
At 2000.
Yeah. And I interned at the Staubach Company like the year before you started working out of college there, or 2 years before. And, I know like I was a legendary intern at the Staubach Company.
I heard Alicia Ragusa didn't like you when you had your feet propped up on the desk.
Yeah. I played in my band. I started playing in my band that summer, and we played like every night. We were playing at 8 hours on like Tuesday nights until 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I always showed up, but I would show up like extremely hungover, possibly still drunk from the night before, at 8 o'clock, and just sometimes would fall asleep in the office, and Alicia would walk in and just be like, "Hey," and I'd fall out. I fell out of the chair one time. Oh gosh. But then I left and played in my band, which was actually, Alicia would not hire me at the Staubach Company. Big surprise, after my internship. But she said, "I think you want to go play music and not do real estate." And I tried to convince her otherwise. She did not believe me. So I didn't get the job. You probably took the job that I was gunning for.
Well, she made me a soft offer to come over and work. At the time, Staubach didn't really hire anybody out of college. And I had multiple job offers, one with Cushman, one with Cousins, one with Robert Lynn. So I guess we maybe would have crossed paths at Robert Lynn. But she said, "You know, we don't hire anybody out of college, but she's like, you know, I think I'll give you a chance. So if you want the job, you can have it, but I would encourage you to go get some experience somewhere else in a couple of years and then come back." So, I said, that's an interesting offer, but really wanted to join the Staubach Company, which I did. It was a great, great opportunity out of school.
That was just interning there. Don't get me wrong. I would show up hungover and whatnot, but I actually did work really hard and I loved working there. The culture was probably, in terms of everywhere I've worked in my life, that culture is undeniably the best as it that it was in 1998 at the Staubach Company. They were still on Hillcrest. It had its family company vibe, but it was so powerful at the same time. You know,
I'm really blessed because I learned the right culture from the get-go. So this whole idea of, you know, fee and me brokers or, you know, executive suites for brokers or internal competition or siloed brokers and all these terms that are fairly stereotypical in our industry, I don't know any better. So I only learned there that you work in a team, that you field the best team for the job, for the project, for the client. You work with whoever you need to you know, ensure success. So that was just kind of second nature. And that's something that I'll always be thankful for, that I learned it what I would call the right way early on. So every stop I've had since then, we initiate kind of the same idea and concept that made Staubach successful.
Yeah. So I did go play in my band, and then I started at Robert Lynn when I was 27. So you'd been at Staubach for like 6 years at that point. And that's when I met you the first time, is when I got back into real estate and doing industrial. And then a couple years later, when Staubach sold to JLL, you and Sharon Morrison went to Transwestern and took over the industrial division there. And I had just joined randomly like 6 months before that occurred. But then you guys came in and overhauled the industrial division there with this mentality of this, really the Staubach culture of teaming on everything and always never going after things by yourself, but always working as a team and instilling that in Transwestern when you were there. And that's when we really met and became friends. So that was when we were both, and you were running the division and I was like 2 years into brokerage. And we were both around 30, 29 or something.
Yeah. I think I just turned, this was 2008. Staubach just sold and, yeah, realized that I was a shareholder at the Staubach Company, and one of the maybe smallest shareholders, but I was a shareholder. And I saw how meaningful it could be when you had ownership and actually the company that you were working for. And Sharon and I had an idea that, you know, brokerage, industrial brokerage at the time was there was not a true, I think, number one brokerage team in Dallas-Fort Worth. Like Staubach, the office team, was clearly number one at the time. And the competitive set was kind of split up between, you know, Robert Lynn had a great team, Lee and Associates, Cushman, CB, they were great industrial brokers kind of spread out all over the place. And we felt like with the Staubach model of the team approach and working as a team and submarket focus, kind of taking the best pieces of the Staubach Company and then taking the best pieces from what we thought was worked really well at Robert Lynn, was the whole submarket approach, which is, you know, how you learn the business, mm-hmm. that we could put together something special. And Transwestern didn't have a really big industrial presence in one of the largest industrial markets. And, you know, at the time thought it was a great opportunity for us to kind of test that theory. And I would say it worked. I mean, I'm probably most proud of that team that we built there at the time. I think we had 15 industrial brokers. Some are still there. Some, you know, came with us when we partnered with Emmett Smith, and, you know, just a great team and a great culture. And that was a lot of fun.
Lots of very powerful brokers came out of that time. I mean,
they sure did.
Brad Strzok and Jim Hazard, both. I mean, they've like gone to the highest level possible. Sharon obviously was already there, but I think, you know, she's like that whole business with the ESRP, they took that to the top and they're still crushing it. So
yeah, Bill De La Chapelle, joined Landcard.
He did.
Brett Owens is still over there, you know, doing great work.
John Fulton was
there. Legendary.
Godfather.
Henry Knopic. Tim Wheeler just started at SVN.
Did he?
Yeah.
He was Clint Riley.
Clint Riley.
Yeah. I recruited Clint Riley, and now you guys are partners.
We do some stuff together, yeah.
And I'm just like really giving the background because we have such a cool backstory, especially in the commercial real estate business and other things. But I also was just, like you said, I was trained doing sub-markets. So I just worked two zip codes. And then I got an opportunity to go pitch Dynamics. And I remember you coached me through that pitch, really. And it was going from sub-market to a company that had 100 facilities throughout North America. And you coached me through how to pitch it. And I still have the laminated placemat that I basically just ripped from you because you had used it in another presentation, like showing cost savings across the board in all these different cities. And it's like thumbtacked to the wall in my office. So that was pretty cool. And then that's where my whole career shifted. And I went from sub-market to doing multi-market tenant rep. And that's what I still do now. So
I'm still waiting for the check in the mail for that pitch.
It was a short time check. Then I left and went to Colliers. Yeah. Well, sorry about that, buddy. One of these days, you get my checks to invest in your development company.
Yeah, well, no, I'm glad you're on board, man. I have several real estate people on board. You mentioned Brad and Sharon and Jim. They came with us in Fund 2.
I'm in Fund 2.
You're in Fund 2. So we have a couple real estate guys that are in Fund 2. I like having real estate people in our funds because we can bounce ideas off of them or see if they like the site or like the project. And so yeah, that's been fun.
I was getting divorced for Fund 1, so it wasn't a good time. you hit me up, but I didn't have the money.
At least you came in a Fund 2, so that's good.
So, but now to backtrack from us meeting, I like to go back to like your childhood, really just like where you grew up, what that was like, and how you feel like those years from like 12 to 22, you know, you joined the Staubach company when you're 22, what happened from 12 to 22 and how did that shape you?
Well, I grew up in Austin, back before Austin was the Austin we know it today. It was still, I think for the most part, a college town. And grew up in Westlake in Austin. And my dad was in real estate, so he actually started in Dallas, was a partner at Lincoln Properties way back in with Bill Duvall brought him over and they wanted to start an Austin office. So I was actually born in Dallas, but moved to Austin when I was, I think, 1984. And so that was during the development craze of the 80s. And I grew up around a lot of the development and they were building at one time, a high-rise downtown Austin, a suburban office, retail in San Antonio. And so I think that's I used to go to work with my dad, which was a ton of fun. I remember that vividly. And so I think that's where I got the real estate bug, just being around it at a young age. Of course, I saw the SNL savings and loans crisis in the late 80s, and I know that was tough. But just kind of got it in my blood and kind of always, I think, wanted to do it, looked at some other things.
What else happened in high school? You played football?
I played football at Westlake.
You played with Drew Brees,
Drew Brees,
right?
He was a year younger, so he was our starting quarterback my senior year. I think we were the winningest football team in all of classifications and all of Texas in the 1990s.
So did you win state when you were there?
Did not. We went to state, went to the playoffs every year. We were undefeated every year in the regular season. So we only lost three games on our varsity team. Sophomore year lost one game. That was in the playoffs. Junior year lost one game, which is the state championship. We played John Tyler. And then my senior year, we lost in the playoffs, but Drew tore his ACL in the quarterfinals. And we lost the next game to San Antonio Roosevelt.
You're playing with your second team quarterback.
Yeah, second, which was a, you know, we got a Hall of Fame quarterback here. So in fairness to the second team quarterback, it was a little bit of a drop off.
Right.
And we almost beat the state champions and ended up winning state that year. Drew came back the next year after I graduated and they won the state championship.
They did.
Yeah, they did. And
That's exciting. My football team at Woodrow Wilson sucked. So I was the opposite. We went 0-10 my senior year.
It was a fun ride. I think a lot of my work ethic comes from those days of, I mean, you appreciate this and the two-a-days and the training and the off season. And I was always kind of a blue collar hard worker. And I think I was not the best athlete. I always had to work for what I got. And I think that carried over into business years later.
Did you do anything else in high school or were you just pretty much focused on football?
I ran track just pretty much for football purposes. And so, you know, those were kind of my two sports. But football was my passion.
Yeah. Right on. And then you went to Tech.
Went to Tech, actually walked on there. So,
Summit Hogue, who was a guest on this podcast.
Yeah. I love that story. Summit was after I was there at the last few years of Spike Dykes, who was a great man, great, great football coach, and was a fullback. So I walked on the team, and that was a great experience. I didn't play a whole lot.
Were you on the team the whole time?
Not the whole time, for 3 years.
That's a lot of college football.
It was a lot of practices and, you know, playing scout team and, you know, just being part of the program and going to bowl games and, you know, beat Texas at home several times and, you know, had some really great experiences. It was a box I got to check and I'm glad I did it and never regret it. And it was a lot of fun.
Right on. Then we covered Staubach. You worked there, high performer, started Transwestern, business-wise. Anything else you want to get into, like those early years of adulthood, your 20s?
Man, it was just a great,
you became a dad at a pretty young age.
I did. I became a dad and was...
How old were you when you...
28.
Yeah.
So he's 16 now. A single dad. It was unexpected. One of the biggest blessings of my life, Garrett, who's again now 16, he just got his driver's license.
So wow.
A car. So seeing him drive out of the driveway was pretty, pretty wild. I can't believe that was 16 years ago. But yeah, that was a pretty life altering thing at the age of 28 when you weren't expecting it.
You're not married.
Yeah. And you know, just did what I thought was...
You stepped up.
I like to think I did.
You did, dude.
You know, worked from home a couple times a week, you know, had a nursery at the house and I, you know, have pictures of, you know, being at my laptop and having a baby Bjorn and, you know, this infant.
Did you live with his mom ever after it? Or you guys were always just like, we're going to split time.
Yeah, we're just going to co-parent and be the best parents we can. And, you know, I think for the most part that's occurred. And, I think we've done the best that we possibly could. And he's a well-rounded kid. He's a good kid. He's actually in a competitive dance, which is really cool. He travels the country and, you know, being a football guy and an athlete, to see him as an athlete in a different way has been pretty amazing to watch. So I'm kind of a proud dad sitting in the bleachers watching him.
That's really cool. Yeah. And I co-parent now. I was married, obviously, but when I got divorced, I called you for advice about co-parenting since you had already done it for so long. And you gave me a lot of good advice. And that was... really live as close as possible as you can to Gina, because when these things come up, like she's got to go to a yoga class or something, instead of her getting a babysitter, she lives an hour away. Like, you want to be there so you can go pop over and spend that time with your kids. Like, that's some of the best advice I got when I went through the divorce process, and she and I live 5 minutes away, and it's been it's, I went to, you know, I went to go seek a lot of advice from people that have been through that and learned quickly the lessons that were already learned by others. And man, I appreciate that advice. That was one of the most important things. And made this whole transition way easier being close by. So
yeah, that'd be the best advice for anybody going through something like that is live close. The accessibility to help raise your children and be there for small things and big things is just super important.
And then you got married to Jenny. Was that at Transwestern or before?
Yes. Right around so there. So I met Jenny right after Garrett was born. And so it's been cool because she's been a part of Garrett's life really since he's been born. And we were kind of Sharon and I were coming up with this plan to launch, you know, this Transwestern platform and leave the Staubach company, which Jenny's dad was still the, you know, managing director, president of Staubach Houston. So that was,
is that how you met her?
Yeah, it was actually the blind date set up. Jenny flew in for a Staubach Christmas party. Her dad was flying in at Alicia's house. I was in Colorado hunting, and she was talking to Roger and his kind of marketing director at the time, a lady named Betty Johnson, and they were asking her if she was dating anybody, and she said, "Well, no, I just broke up with somebody." And I think, I don't know if it was Roger's idea or Betty's idea, but they said, "Well, hey, what if we set you up with a broker here in Dallas?" And, you know, she was kind of like, "Yeah, sure, whatever." I mean, and then I got an email from Betty saying, "Hey, would you want to go out with Jenny Bello, Dan Bello's daughter?" And I'm like, well, you know, everybody kind of knew who Dan was. He was a big deal at the Staubach company. And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, it took us a while to finally... They put us in touch. We emailed.
And she lived in Houston?
No, she was here in Dallas practicing law. And it took us a while. First date was at a Mavs game. And like they say, the rest is history. In fact, I don't know if you remember this, but it was maybe one of our second or third dates. You were playing at Adair's. And we came in. And we had gone out to dinner and a show, and we'd come into Adair's and we were dancing, and you'd come up to us and said hi. So that was
before Transwestern. That's
that was before Transwestern, and that was before we were married.
I remember that. And you know, it's really funny is that was the night of Todd Hubbard's wedding.
Oh wow!
So I remember you gave me shit because I was wearing a fedora hat on stage, and I believe like we somehow took the fedora hat from a valet parker at Todd Hubbard's wedding and like was wearing that at Adair's that night. And I mean, those were some wild days. And I think I was working at Robert Lynn then, and Todd Hubbard is the one reason why I went to Robert Lynn, because we were friends. He grew up with my cousins in Brownwood and helped me get a job there. So yeah, that was when I was during my Robert Lynn days, and you were at Staubach still. And then, and you have two kids. With Jenny?
Yeah, with Jen. We've blessed with a now 10-year-old Jay and an 8-year-old and Cade. And it's just all hands on deck.
Three boys.
Yeah, we're really blessed.
Right on. And then I left Transwestern, joined Colliers. You and Sharon formed Emmett Smith.
Yeah, we...
shortly thereafter.
We were at Transwestern for 5 years, built an amazing team. Again, super proud of that team we built. And we were being asked to take on additional kind of leadership roles, taking on maybe the office tenant rep team as well, because the industrial team was doing really great. And these were at times when rents were, you know, coming out of 08, 09.
$3.50, $3.
Even twos.
Yeah.
I mean, I did a deal in Valwood for a company called Wisteria. Andrew Newsom, great person, great client, but like $245 a foot, I think, was our first year rent. That same deal today would be easily in the 7 or 8.
That's like right when I was working with Dynamics at the early stages. And I mean, being a tenant rep broker during those times, you were just such a rock star. the way it would look on paper.
Oh, for sure.
Because, yeah. I mean, you're going from, yeah, like whatever, 350 to 250, which is obviously, now it's like if somebody locked in a 350 rate like 15 years ago or something, they're just getting like 950.
Oh, no. It's been tough for tenants. But yeah, so we were being asked to take on some leadership responsibilities, additional leadership responsibilities at Transwestern. And I think Sharon and I just came to the conclusion, like, if we're going to put this kind of effort and making what we thought we needed to do to make it work for the company, it was going to take a lot of effort. And we just said, we might as well just start from scratch. We had met Emmett at Staubach when Emmett retired. He started with Staubach Retail Cypress, which is kind of this crazy full circle that we're in, but was started working for Cypress. I think it was Cypress Smith or something like that, which was Staubach's retail development arm, started by Chris McGuire. And we got in contact with Emmett and said, hey, we have this idea. Would you be interested in launching basically, you know, Staubach number two with your brand? And he liked the idea from the get-go. It took us about a year to put together, and we finally put together and then launched Eastmith Realty Partners in 2013.
Why? I mean, obviously, like, Emmett Smith is a legendary Dallas Cowboy, like Roger Staubach. How did you meet Emmett Smith? How did that even come up? Like, well, let's go get Emmett.
Yeah, Sharon had more interaction with him. And then we knew he had a couple people that were working with him, which we knew. And so, you know, we got in touch with them. Then, you know, Emmett came to the meeting and again, kind of pitched the idea. And there was, I don't think there was really a whole lot of hesitation. I think because Staubach just sold for 700 plus million, whatever the number was.
I always say a billion.
Close to a billion. And that was fresh. That was, you know, it had recently happened. I think it was real easy for us and Emmett to see, well, you know, that's a possibility. And he knew the transaction. And so we put it down on paper and we did a little marketing video and, you know, started the partnership in 2013.
Yeah. And then 2015, you left.
Yeah, 15. I was going through some life transitions, probably more on the personal side, and left in 2013. I was a third owner of that business, so I sold my third back to Sharon. And, you know, it was a good transaction at the time. I think it was fair on my side and fair on her side. She now had majority ownership of Eastmith Realty Partners. Emmett's entity was a third. So I was a third. Sharon was a third. Emmett's entity was a third. And, started Landry Commercial. And, you know, my whole plan at that point was to not only do brokerage and try to grow a brokerage team, but it was also trying to get into the, you know, principal side of the business, development, asset management, manage a fund, raise a fund, and just start investing on the principal side as well.
Yep, with Reserve Capital Partners, and that's
when Reserve came in 17.
Yeah,
so there was a couple years where I was doing just brokerage, building a team, and the Reserve idea came, you know, a couple years later, and so, you know, now it's the brokerage team, and then the principal acquisition development asset management team.
How much have you bought with Reserve since 2017? So like 6 years.
Yeah, all the entities, I believe it's somewhere around $500 million worth of real estate.
That's amazing.
So we've been active. It's been land, it's been office, it's been industrial, some self-storage. So we did not want to be put in a box, which we've seen so many funds do and investment strategies, that you got to do just this. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be just light industrial, or it's just bulk industrial, or it's just land. We feel like the product types, you know, we knew we wanted to be active in, because if there was an opportunity, we wanted to take advantage of it if it was going to make money for us and our investors.
You want to specialize in good deals.
Good deals, 100%.
Yeah. Love it. And then your brokerage business, you've moved to SRS now, and you had that up and you're growing that nationwide doing, is it tenant and landlord rep?
Or yeah, it's full service.
Full service industrial real estate platform. And that, and SRS has historically been a retail only company. And then you guys came over with industrial, which I think is really smart, because obviously retail is so tied to the supply chain, and there's retailers are some of the largest users of industrial real estate. So yeah, love the synergies.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, you know, there were synergies. There were obvious synergies when we got in touch, or SRS got in touch with me. You know, obviously knew the legacy of SRS as Staubach Retail Services. We'd mentioned Emmett working with Chris McGuire, who started the platform with Roger in 1984. It's been around some time, and SRS did not sell to JLL when Staubach sold. So
they
remained private, employee-owned business, about $100 million in revenue, 25 offices. And yeah, when we got in touch, and you know, we just had a small brokerage team at Landry Commercial, and they said, hey, would you grow our local industrial team? And quickly, because we've done that at Transwestern, I said, no, but I'll help you grow the national platform. Mm-hmm. And they liked the idea, kind of put together a business plan, and been doing that for, it'll be a year in April. So we're trying to grow industrial offices all over the country.
One of my old teammates, K-Rod, Christina Rodriguez, works with you guys.
She's awesome. Cool. We love K-Rod.
She's a good get.
Yeah, we're really, really happy to have her.
She played a great role in helping us shape our team. And then she moved on to really a big operations role within Colliers. Now she has a pretty, you know, she's doing operations with you guys too. So
she's great.
Happy we're for really, her.
Yeah, happy you. To have her.
Yep. What do you think, if you could pick like your superpower or something that has contributed to your success over the years, what do you think that is that differentiates you or has helped you succeed?
Man, I think it's resiliency. I mean, as you know, in our business, it's up and down all the time. I mean, there's very few times where you're getting good news and it's followed by negative news. And If you get too high and you get too low in our business, like you're in the wrong business. And so just the resiliency to push on, you know, one of our core values is endurance.
Oh, I like that.
And I think that comes from kind of the sports background. My dad comes from a blue collar refining town, and he always had that blue collar work ethic. And I think I've inherited that from him. So kind of that blue collar mentality with resilience is where I think I get a leg up on certain things.
What are your other core values?
Loyalty.
That's one of ours.
Yeah, loyalty, endurance. I memorize it. Dedication, loyalty, endurance, and excellence.
Four of them.
Yeah.
So now what advice would you give your younger self?
Oh, man. It's a great question. I liked when you asked that to Summit. Man, I've learned so much in 44 years. And I think my biggest needle movers for me personally have just been my spiritual growth, just my personal growth as it relates to relationships, not only, you know, business relationships, but personal relationships, my marriage. And God, I would grab that young guy at Staubach and I would tell him so much just about humility, vulnerability, ego, relationships. And I wish I could grab that guy and kind of tell him all those things that I've learned over these years.
You had a big awakening and shift, I think, in like your whole demeanor, And whenever, like our mid-30s or whatever, like I remember when you just started diving into personal and spiritual growth. And
I needed a shake up, you know?
Yeah.
There's
you clearly, and I mean, I knew you back when and now, and I like both brands, but you're definitely like, you matured overnight. And I feel like, you know, you helped me a lot with a lot of that around the same time as well. And it's never too late to go make changes, you know, in how you're living.
Now, you know, ego and selfishness is probably the two things that will destroy more lives and more relationships. And it's an ongoing battle, obviously. You know, we're in a business of, you got to have a healthy ego to succeed, but at the same time, to have enough humility to, you know, to take care of the people that are around you, to take care of your family, to work on your relationships. When it's all about you, man, that doesn't get you very far. And it's probably, you know, the two biggest lessons that I've learned is, you know, try to be selfless. And again, I don't get it right a lot of the time, but I get it right a lot more than I used to.
Yeah. It's just being conscious of it, I think, because the ego is a powerful, positive thing up to a certain point. but if you let it take over your life, then that's another story.
That's
so,
right.
Here's a question. What's your greatest failure and what positive thing did that trigger?
Well, it's not a failure yet, but I just think, you know, not knowing great healthy boundaries around a marriage was almost one of my greatest failures.
Really going back to this whole ego selfishness thing, 100, probably, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Like when I'm living for myself and my own, you know, trying to fulfill just myself, that you're never going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not getting the memo earlier or sooner or not knowing that in my younger life, I would, you know, I'd say I would like to redo that, but at the same time, like it's made, you know, when you go through struggles and you go through a little bit of pain, like that's when you're going to learn. And you and I are built the same in that manner. I think I know you well enough. It's like we're a little bit too stubborn just for, you know, the good Lord to give us a little nudge on the shoulder and he's to grab us by the back of the shirt and shake us around a little bit for
throw
us to get the boy.
Yeah, throw us out the window.
And so I guess it would have been easier to take the subtle hints, but that typically doesn't work for me. But relational knowledge and mostly how it impacted my family and my wife and my kids. And again, it's still always work in progress, but I'm also most proud of the resiliency that I've had in most of those relationships, most importantly, my marriage.
That's awesome. Okay, moving along. Got some rapid fire questions for you so we can learn about other things that make Brant Landry, Brant Landry. What's your morning ritual? What does that look like?
Man, it's exercise. I got to do it. I'm kind of go stir crazy if I don't.
You go pretty early, right?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, I'm probably anywhere from 5:30 to 6 start time. Occasionally I'll slip in there at 7, but yeah, it's.
You have a trainer. You were just telling me, kicks your ass.
Yeah, over at Equinox, his name's Ryan. And if anybody wants a good ass kicking, go see Ryan. But I've done all sorts of training over the years, and from boxing to just running. And I can't get into yoga quite like you. I wish I could, but man, I have to have the exercise, and it's a lot more. Probably mental now than it is. I mean, it's certainly physical, but it's a big piece of my stress management, just overall attitude and energy. It's something that my body and my mind definitely need.
We're doing this in the middle of Snowmageddon in Dallas, and I've been with my kids all week, and you know, like my nanny has not been able to get over because the roads are so bad. And normally, like when I, if I have the kids all day, she'll come over so I can go at least get in a yoga class. Cause I try to work out like at least 5 times a week, but I'm, this is like day 4 of not working out. Although the kids have been dropped off and I'm going to go try to get something in, today, but the roads are so bad. I think my yoga studio was shut down yesterday, but I got to go do something today. It's like my antidepressant.
Yeah. Cabin fever is real.
I did do the sauna and a cold plunge this morning, so I got in my pool.
Yeah, I can't get on the cold plunge train. I've heard about it, but
I love it.
I'm a little too scared to do that.
What's your favorite hotel? I know you're a bougie traveler.
I've been known to be a hotel snob from time to time, but man.
Or spot to go vacation.
Oh, you know, gosh, there's so many. My wife and I love to travel. Man, Italy is one of our favorites. The Amalfi Coast is just phenomenal. Just for like a cool hotel, one of my favorites is Hotel Emma in San Antonio. I think it's the
What's it called?
Hotel Emma.
Hotel Emma.
Yeah, they renovated or completely reconstructed the old Pearl Brewery in San Antonio. And San Antonio is not necessarily known for, you know, its high-end hotels, but this is probably one of the coolest hotels I've ever been to. Great restaurants. So that's a cool hotel. We went to Santa Barbara this summer, and the new Rosewood in Santa Barbara is pretty spectacular. Highly recommend that one too.
Nice. What about your favorite restaurant? We eat dinner for a living, basically.
I know.
Right.
I mean, I'm not as up to speed on all the new restaurants that open up in Dallas. I kind of go to the same ones, but man, just for I think the best steak and still to this day is still Nick and Sam's. And I love, you know.
What steak do you get there?
Bone and filet every time. I don't think I've ordered anything other than that. For all the years I've been going,
we need to go there.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Jorge's Tacos at E-Bar, pretty spectacular for good Tex-Mex. And then great sushi kind of all around town. My wife and I always go to Shinsei. That's kind of been our date spot for all these years.
I like Shinsei a lot. My friend who goes by Elvis is the sushi chef there. And
my wife and I have been going date night to Shinsei for 15 years. So
Japanese Elvis, great food there. Okay. What about a book that's worth talking about?
Oh man, that's a good one. Just went through Seth Rogen's book. That's a pretty good
really? One. Really? Yeah. I didn't even know he wrote a book. I'd love to read
pretty
that.
Entertaining.
He's hilarious.
I mean, I always go back to Lonesome Dove just because that's a classic. Great book. If for those that are looking for self-help books, I got plenty of those too. But if a great marriage book is Sacred, What Did You Expect?
So what did you expect?
Anybody, and it's exactly like it sounds. So anybody that wants a good marriage book, that's one of my favorites.
I think having been married before, you can use all the help you can get in marriage.
100%.
It's a great thing, yet a challenging thing as well. Okay. You know what I'm reading right now? Wanted to mention is Swagger by Jimmy Johnson.
Oh,
it man. Just came out. And it's so awesome.
I would love to read that.
It's his autobiography. Because it's so good.
I'm super into these old school football coaches that, you know, the kind of the Vince Lombardi or Bill Belichick school of football. And my dad went to high school with Jimmy Johnson, so he's known him for a long
Port
time.
Port Arthur.
Yeah.
He talks about that a lot.
Yeah.
And he talks about growing up blue collar there and all of that.
That was it.
But he is so great. And being... you know, at the end of the day, I'm running a team and managing a business. Even though I work at Colliers, I feel like a CEO of a company quite often. And technically, to a certain degree, I am because we're running our own business here. And that's the beauty of our business. It's so entrepreneurial, even when you're working at a big company. And hearing all of his coaching strategies, I mean, they just carry right through to business.
It does. And I use so much, whether it's... you know, a coach for, you know, old school coach for, you know, any of the Texas Tech sports, or, you know, a Belichick type, or Nick Saban. I probably listen to more Nick Saban, you know, one-liners on Twitter. And I share a lot of that with our team, just because that's, I mean, that is, if you're going to put a profile on us, myself, or any of our teams that we have in any of our businesses, that's it. It's always going to go back to hard work, blue collar, you know, or if you're not satisfied with your performance, let's look in the mirror. And we kind of only have ourselves to blame.
Good attitude.
Yeah. Victim does not work well with us.
Yes.
And
victim mentality is just such a culture wrecker.
And I
get right out of town.
And I understand that people, you know, get head starts, and people are I was put in a great position out of college to get a job in real estate because my dad was in it. And I don't shy away from that. But at the same time, like, if you really want it and you're dedicated and you're a hard worker, in today's world, you can be put in that position and you can grab the bull by the horns, and you can make it happen.
I know people from all walks of life, as do you. And if people are successful, they don't have victim mentality, no matter what their upbringing was.
Nobody's going to
operate that way and be successful.
Look at Summit Hill.
Sorry for yourself.
Comes from a cotton farm.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere in the panhandle.
Yeah.
In fact, I took that snippet from your podcast and sent it to our team and said, look, guys, you know, there's really no excuse.
He thought commercial real estate was like selling commercials on like billboards, or he thought it was like selling billboard space. And I mean, when he was like 23, and then he's owning his own company at 29. So
I love success stories like that.
There you go.
The people that make it happen.
Speaking of quotes, do you have a quote that you would like to share off the top of your head?
Yeah, I've always had a mentality of have a long-term vision, but you execute it with short-term urgency. And that's
like that.
I've tried to live by for a long time.
Is that from someone, or is that just a...
Brant Landry.
Brant Landry. I like that guy.
I hadn't put a trademark on it yet.
I'm going to put that in my quote notes.
Yeah.
Music's very important to you.
Oh, yeah.
My band, The Boys Named Sue, played your 40th birthday party, actually.
I'm a big fan of Boys Named Sue, too.
I appreciate that.
Oh gosh, man.
That was a good gig out at the ranch.
Yeah, you guys, Bellow Ranch. Max Stalling. I mean, that's...
Max Stalling is... we opened up for Max Stalling at your birthday party, and Max Stalling and Heather Stalling was on stage with him. That he's one of my favorite songwriters.
Huge Max Stalling fan. I'm probably mostly into Zach Bryan right now.
Me too.
Went and saw him at Red Rocks about a month ago.
What's your favorite song?
Oh gosh, man.
Were you there when it snowed?
Yes.
One of my buddy John Reardon was there too.
It was epic.
He was like, I think he said he was crying.
It was the most majestic concert I've ever been to. Like
it's alive on Spotify now. Yes. They have a live recording of that show.
And he's an artist that is better live than his, like, all his songs live from that concert are better than when you listen to him recorded.
Yeah. He's playing in Aspen President's Day. I would go if you want to go. The Belly Up Tavern. You can go buy tickets on StubHub.
I saw that.
I've never seen him, and I've just fallen in love with his music and just his whole vibe and the way he talks about the music industry. And just his songwriting is so stellar. That's what I picked when I interviewed myself. Is my, like, what song do I want to share? I shared Godspeed by him. But do you have a favorite song?
Oh man, there's so many.
Oklahoma Smoke Show.
Yes. Oklahoma City is probably my favorite, but I mean, all his, I read yesterday where Something in the Orange went to number one on some pop chart.
That is such a great song. So many.
You know, he's crossing over different genres, which I love. I think so cool about him. He's so authentic. But man, old school country, huge fan. Kind of the Waylon Jennings, which if you look at Zach Bryan and Waylon Jennings, they have a lot of kind of similar pieces in their music. Willie Waylon, that whole,
yeah.
And then of course all the Red Dirt stuff that's come out, going from Robert O'Keefe all the way up to to what's kind of new today.
I have a Waylon Jennings tattoo here on my arm.
Of course you do.
I love
that. Yeah.
Love Waylon. We played with Waylon. That was one of the highlights of my music career. We opened up for him in Austin. We were very early on this. I think we played like a 20-minute set. Like we were one of the first out of like 15 or 20 bands at a festival. But technically, we opened up for Waylon. So, okay. What about a charity or cause that you donate money and time to? I think I know the answer because I think my band played this too, if you're still involved, but go ahead and tell me what you're up to these days.
Well, my brother-in-law and I started the Elizabeth Toon Charities back in, this was like 2007. Unfortunately, you know, a tragic accident with Elizabeth Toon, was great friends with the family, worked with her dad, Larry.
Great guy.
Yeah. Her youngest brother, Justin, actually works for one of our platforms now.
He interned at Transwestern when I was there.
Yep. So we've, you know, been friends for forever and, you know, just had an idea to memorialize a tragedy, but try to make something good out of it. And there was me and my brother-in-law, C.L. Baskin, and just a couple other people that started in our living room. And man, it's been thriving ever since. So it's been...
How much have you raised over the years?
Oh, gosh,
it's been going
on. Millions.
Yeah.
I don't know what the total numbers anymore.
What does it go towards?
So it's a pass-through charity. So we've had partner charities every year, which is Scottish Rite and Camp John Mark, which are great organizations. And there's a certain amount that goes to those every year. And then it's an application process. But the theme has to be children in need in North Texas.
Got it.
So as long as it checks those boxes, then it can go. So there's, I don't know, there's hundreds of applications that come through every year. There's a committee that's executive directors, which narrows it down, and the committee selects what charities that it goes to.
Does someone have a full-time job managing that charity? Or
I mean, I ran it for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years before we brought on executive directors.
That's amazing that you built a charity that has become that type of a charity where, I mean, somebody's...
Man, that's it's beyond...
So many
that's
people.
Just, that's a God thing. It's beyond me. I mean, that was something that seemed right at the time. I think the vision was for it to be self-sustaining long after I was not involved with a charity and long after the family was even involved in the charity. And 15 years, 16 years later, it's still a thriving charity. I think people look forward to the events. There's a sporting clay shoot and a concert.
We played with Jack Ingram the year that we played the event.
Yeah, and Jack's been a huge part of it, and he's played year after year. Pat Green's played a couple. Randy Rogers, it's usually kind of Texas country, which is great. But it's just a thriving, ongoing charity, and I love to see it. And it's self-sustaining. I'm not actively involved in it anymore. We have started our own charity called 5 and 2, and our companies take a percentage of our profits every year, and we put it into 5 and 2. And we're going to start planning our first event, a fundraising event, this year.
Okay.
And
why 5 and 2?
Well, matches the scripture of Jesus, you know, with the loaves and the fish. So feeding the thousands, and we're so blessed with the profitability of you know, our different businesses. But we don't want to do it alone. Like we have vendors, we have people that we support that do well from our businesses, and we want to bring them into the fold in the community and say, okay, guys, we don't want to row the boat ourselves. You know, if we're going to put up this much, help us raise this much more, we can have even a bigger impact. So we're planning our first charity event this year.
Cool. I think we already answered this question. But if you had $100 million in a briefcase and you had to invest it in one thing, what would that be?
invest in one thing.
Not like one building, but like one asset or one thing.
There's
like,
it's called the Banded Peaks Ranch in Colorado. And I go elk hunting there every year. And the Mellon family owns it out of New York. And well, it's actually the kids, you know, from the Mellon family. And that it's heaven on earth.
You go elk hunting there every year?
Every year. Been like,
I want to go elk hunting sometime.
7 years, 8 years in a row. And it's one of the most special places I've ever been.
Do you bow hunt elk or do you?
Yeah, we're archery hunting.
Yeah.
It's just spectacular. So if I had to invest in one thing and had $100 million, that would be it.
Maybe elk hunting is very rigorous. That requires endurance.
It's a lot of endurance. It's
how much that you think they would cost $100 million to buy that ranch?
Yeah. It's like 60,000 acres. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Would you just go move there?
Probably. I would at least move there from September to probably, you know, November. And we'd hunt elk and mule deer and all kinds of.
Where is it again?
It is just south. It's between Chama, New Mexico and Pagosa Springs, Colorado.
Okay.
And
what's it called again?
The Banded Peaks Ranch.
Banded Peaks Ranch.
They have 14,000 foot peaks.
Wow.
Surrounded, kind of surrounding the border of the ranch. And then an incredible trout river that runs right in the middle of it. It's pretty spectacular.
So what's the number one thing on your like 2023 vision board / bucket list? But something that you want to accomplish? Big right now.
Yeah. So our goals professionally are to, the next couple of years to build 3 million square feet of industrial product, to acquire 1 million square feet of office product, and from the brokerage team to have at least 2 other industrial major markets open. So whether that's Atlanta and Southern Cal or New Jersey or Chicago or a combination of kind of the 5 major industrial markets, we obviously already have Dallas, San Antonio and Austin. So, you know, it'd be nice to have Houston, but definitely want to get, you know, these major industrial hubs opened up and get going.
Well, I'll tell you this, the people that listen to this podcast are really a bunch of very talented industrial real estate brokers from across the country. So if you're listening and you're in one of these major markets and you want to do something entrepreneurial, hit up Brant.
We'll love it.
It's my good friend. Then speaking of which, where do our listeners find you if they want to go get a job and open up one of the major market offices or, you know, just talk to you about elk hunting?
Well, I do any of it. I love to elk hunt. Love to talk about elk hunting, of course, business. But yeah, Reserve Capital Partners is our, you know, kind of development principal platform. So you can find me on the website or SRS, either one, SRS Industrial. You can find us on the SRS website. So
LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm on
LinkedIn.
You're active, sure, on LinkedIn. Uh-huh. Brant Landry, LinkedIn. You're the man. Thanks for doing this. So great catching up, brother.
Thanks, buddy. I love what you're doing here. It's been fun and entertaining.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on trucking. Adios.